So I want to thank everyone for coming today. Apologies with the kind of room. As you notice, the room kept changing for this session, and it was not our fault. It was that they were doing construction in the room that we had originally booked. They moved us to a different location. Then there was another issue, so they moved us again. So thank you, everyone, for making your way through the maze of the Arts Building to get here today. We really appreciate it. Before we get started on the optimal budget strategies, we're going to quickly go through a few updates. Oh, it says Marlene's talking, but it's actually me. We're going to go through a few updates from OSR and RFMS and recent communications that have been issued regarding research administration. And then we'll move into the optimal budget strategies, where Olga will be presenting. And there's just a little summary on what to expect in the budget strategies presentation. Basically, the budget presentation is going to be, you're going to notice that it's largely pre-award, but that's because we want you to get it, a budget should be developed properly at the pre-award stage so everything else rolls smoothly. So it's all one process. Just quickly for OSR updates, as many of you know, Mary Margaret left August 23rd. So now as a... While we reorg in OSR, Olga is the Interim Director of Grants and Contracts, and Marlene is the Interim Director of Awards Management and Operations. So basically, they're taking over Mary Margaret's portfolio on the interim, but it's been divided among the two people. In the past, a lot of things got directed to Mary Margaret and may not have been directed to other people in OSR. So just make sure that if you see something addressed just to Mary Margaret, that it does get forwarded to someone else. Because right now, we don't want things to get lost, because some people still don't know she's not here anymore. And in OSR, we had Teresa retired on August 30th. We haven't decided how Teresa's portfolio will be distributed. Likely it'll be just peppered around the rest of the awards team. But in the meantime, if you have any questions and you see that Teresa was the awards administrator, just direct them to me and I'll look after. I'm pretty much looking after her portfolio for the interim and bring in other people as needed. And Elvie will talk about RFMS.
Okay, so as most of you know, RFMS was hit with 5 retirements due to the voluntary retirement program. Leah Archambault left at the mid-June, and her portfolio was dismantled and reshuffled as well, and Linda Augello is now the manager of RFMS. The supervisors are Cindy and Marilena, and Sonia, who's in charge of compliance and monitoring. Pat Champagne's portfolio was also dismantled and all the funds reshuffled amongst existing staff in RFMS. The same for Joanna Geisick's portfolio. So if you had funds that you were dealing with those fund administrators, you'd have to go to Banner to find out who the new fund administrator is for those funds, because we've shuffled them amongst many staff, and so they were not able to communicate to the communities in a way where we're saying this set of funds is being administered by such and such a new administrator. Monica Coick's portfolio is being administered by Marianne Wang, who's here today. So she's handling the entire portfolio. So if you were dealing with Monica, now it's Mary Ann. And Candon's portfolio is right now, the slot is empty, so we're all kind of filling in for that position, and we're waiting to see what's going to happen with that one, because we've reached our maximum capacity in reshuffling funds to our dear administrators who were kind enough to take on extra work because of these retirements. I think that's it for that.
Okay. Sorry. Not a lot of space back here, so we have to shuffle back and forth. And just to quickly go over some recent updates that were circulated in the last couple weeks, we have circulated them to the RAN listserv as well. They were sent out to the FIS listserv, and then they were sent to the RAN listserv as well. The first one is the academic was sent out on August 23rd, and it pertains to academic salary paid from research funds. We have discussed this a few times at the RAN meetings, but we just wanted to informs all researchers of their obligations. The memo clarified that anyone with an academic staff appointment with a ranked position of assistant professor, associate professor, or professor cannot draw salary from tri-agency funds. The rule is that if the person holds an academic appointment that makes them eligible to apply for grants, even with the tri-agencies, even if they don't have any, that they cannot be paid through tri-agency funds. So at any time when you see an academic appointment or request to have an academic appointment charged to a tri-agency fund, you should be contacting OSR. I think I said to contact Marlene, but you can contact me if you want. You don't want to have to bother Marlene with all these. And just contact us and we'll assess and whether or not it's an appropriate expense to be charged to these funds. This is a regulation that the tri-agencies have had for quite some time, but it didn't necessarily, not a lot of people were aware of it, so this was just to remind everybody of the obligations that we have for academic salary paid from research funds. Oh, and just to let you know as well, the reason for that, the reason the tri-agencies do say that, that you can't charge salary, is because they see that as an indirect cost, and we are reimbursed through the indirect costs of research programs. So anyone who is eligible to apply for a grant could bring indirect costs into the institution. Therefore, they see it as that's where the salary should be paid, is through the reimbursements we get through the indirect cost program. And now LV will talk about the reimbursement of expenses.
So you all received the memo that went out on September 3rd from VP Michael DiGrappa and Rosie Goldstein regarding the missing receipts for expense reports, where the habit was that if a receipt was missing, we would accept a memo saying, yes, I did have this receipt, but I lost it, and we would still reimburse the PI or whoever the claimant was. So that practice is now stopped. Because a memo is deemed non-compliant from tri-agency and all agencies for that matter. So a memo does not replace an original receipt. We do realize that this raised a ton of questions across the community, because that was something that we were always accommodating, which we won't be doing anymore. And as such, the travel policy was reviewed and updated. An update was sent yesterday to the FIS community, and we're going to be sending it to the RAN and FSD community as well today. We didn't get around to that yet. It'll be done today, I believe. Yes. And at the same time, a document was created to outline the changes specifically, because the policy is quite lengthy. So for you to go through, I don't know, I think it's 25 pages. So we highlighted the changes, and the changes relate basically to what we will accept, because I know that taking a picture of a receipt really raised a lot of alarms due to duplicate claims, perhaps. But you could still have done duplicate claims with the memo. So a researcher or whoever could have submitted a memo and then the week after found a receipt and submitted that receipt as well. So that would have also been a duplicate claim. So the receipt, we're accepting images for receipts only for restaurant bills. And you'll see it here, and it'll be sent to you later. Oh, here, sorry. Gas, taxi, parking, and meals. And so when we're taking a picture of those receipts, they have to be of good quality, legible, and readable. So don't just, the claimants cannot just take a sloppy picture of a receipt and expect us to be able to read it. It has to be readable. Otherwise, it will be deemed ineligible or non-compliant by the auditors. We also do realize that in some countries, or we don't, welcome, this is not going up, sorry. We realize that in some instances receipts are not available, so we will accept that, and that's stuff like something like gratuities, you won't necessarily get a receipt, so we know that, and we will accept that. Let's say you don't get a taxi receipt, then we'll accept mileage instead. So it can't be I paid $40 for a taxi, but I don't have a receipt. That's not acceptable. We will accept mileage. So those types of things. So these updates will be sent to you later today. And if you have any questions, you can email Brenda Lam at the RAN or the Research Help Desk.
A question right away about airfare and boarding passes. So this includes
the four tri-agency grants?
This new policy
that says... Yes, so the question for the recording purposes was relating to the infamous boarding passes and airline tickets. So if the boarding pass is missing, so the tri-agency right now has not removed that from their TAFAG. It's still there. However, the university has made a decision as to if the boarding pass is missing, but you have a hotel receipt, you have meal receipts, you have a taxi receipt, so you can place that person in that place, the prospectus, then you claim all of those, you don't need a boarding pass. Okay? However, if you're missing all of those receipts that can place the person in the place, then you need the boarding pass. If the PI has all the other receipts, if the claimant has all the other receipts, but does not have a boarding pass, you don't need to run after the claimant for that boarding pass because those receipts will be able to place them in that city or country. Yes? Yes.
But I don't have a taxi receipt. However, I have a credit card statement.
A credit card statement is not an acceptable form of reimbursement.
Sure, but if you say that lack of certain things, just because you can place someone in a particular...
You need... So the question is, again, lack of certain receipts. You need to have... A travel expense report has to be complete and comprehensive. So you need to have all the receipts that will be able to prove that that person took a trip. So just if you submit an expense report with just an itinerary, that does not prove that the person took the trip. So you would need the hotel bill, a meal, a taxi, a boarding pass. So it's either if they don't have the hotel bill, but they have a boarding pass and they have meal tickets, then that could be acceptable. So it's... If you have a credit card chit for the taxi receipt?
No, I don't have a credit card.
Okay, so if you don't have a credit card...
$125 taxi from one town to another.
Do you have a receipt for the taxi?
No, I don't.
Therefore, it's not acceptable. He'd have to claim mileage. Okay. And this applies across all fund types. It's not now restricted to tri-agency because we didn't want to get into a triage situation whereby we're saying, oh, tri-agency, yes, and others, no. So the best practice is across all fund types. Any other questions? Yes. Yes. Any other questions? You'll probably come across more questions as you submit claims going forward, so don't be shy to ask us and we'll try to guide you as best we can. Okay. Thank you.
I realized I didn't plug in the laptop. So we'll get this back to the presentation. We'll close that up. And we will turn it over to Olga, who will give the budget strategies presentation. We, again, as we mentioned, we won't be using the microphones this time. We won't be chasing after people because the amount of workplace injuries it was causing was quite alarming. So we're just going to go on. What we're going to have the speaker do is repeat the question. So if you don't mind, just ask the question clearly, and then the speaker will repeat it and then answer it so it gets recorded in the, it gets caught in the recording. So thank you.
Good morning. My name is Olga Neiberger, who... doesn't know me. I'm working in the Office of Sponsored Research, and more often you will in contact with my team on a pre-award stage, but it's we're so interrelated on pre-award during implementation of projects as well on post-award management. So the idea that I would like to present to you explain some tips how we would like you to help researchers to build, to develop optimal budget, because this would be a really easiest way and to manage grants, to manage the different type of projects from the beginning and to the end. Okay, so this is just a basic what we talking. At the when researchers all the time trying to think about the new project, certainly they have their own research plans. But as well, all the time, we have to take in considerations agency requirement as well institutional policy. So here, your role as a research administrator is really crucial to help researchers to navigate through this process. So when we talk about award cycle, how it was presented in the previous sessions, you know that it's like proposal development, agency review, award acceptance, project implementations, administration, and close out. So this is point, crucial point on the proposal development, because very often whatever included in proposal budget, it's very difficult, sometimes impossible to change when grant or contract awarded, because it very often would be answer it was awarded on terms that you submitted when you requested this funding. So this is very important to arrive to optimal budget, really to balance the needs of different stakeholders. To make sure that optimal budget align and complement research plans, and that optimal budget will help to ensure implementation of the project when it's awarded. So this is very important to start with research plans, and after this to build a budget. Please never start with, okay, I need to pay students, so I will put him right away on this future grant, and after this I build my research plan around. It's really opposite. I will just to give you very brief overview what we're talking about research plans. You know, like any plans, it's included some outcomes, how researchers to see that would be achieved after this project. As well, after this, to achieve objectives, a certain activity should take place. This is where it's important to support those activities to make sure to understand what kind of resources would be needed to accomplish those activities. As well, at this point, question raised, is it really a research team necessary and would be other institutions involved, because involvement other institutions give additional restrictions or constraint, because in this case on those portion we should take in consideration not only our institutional requirement as well as our partners' institutional requirements. So this is why we are working with our partner institutions' research offices on application stage. Usually, it's again project management plan overall include the different component. Certainly, it's really clear from the beginning should be understandable what is objectives of this project, as well a scope of the project which researchers are looking, and with your help also to define the needs, requirements, deliverables. Very important to have schedule of activities, because sometimes, like from my experience, even looking by for example, in activities it's described that every, like the first year conference will take place in Europe, the second year in Canada, and you could see the travel budget, it's opposite, you budgeted more on the second year. This has already raised the questions from granting agency, from reviewers, and it would be really difficult also for implementation project if you have very strict defined travel budget, for example. Project budget, it's really overall cost of the project as well. It's sometimes it's a very important to see the cost by specific categories. Project teams also important. It's again should be taking in consideration what kind of team needed and what it's would be needs for team to participate in this project, sometimes salaries, stipends, some other type of expenses. Also, it's important consider what we'll be eventually reporting requirements, so what type of communications channels would be used for reporting. And also, very often, we suggest and granting agency required to look in risk which might be associated if this project take a place, and from the beginning to have some kind of risk mitigation strategies. You know, like sometimes if you will not able to find expert or don't have expert in your team, maybe you will eventually going to hire a consultant. So you researchers and you also with help them really to think and about what kind of risk might be in during implementation of the project. As well, certainly taking in consideration different procurement policy, as well when project close, maybe you need additional budget for closing cost, I don't know, reporting or different type expenses. As well, certainly important to take in consideration that any changes might be during the period of the project. So it's really very important to have global picture at development stage. This is very briefly, I would like to mention to you that we will providing you with some tools, please ask us, and also we're developing the different type of tools, but this is just to show you one of example how project work plan should be or, developed or clear represented on a developmental stage, so you could really identify activities, you could really identify timeline when activity take place. It would be really help you a lot to develop optimal budget. So this is certainly the budget development process really supporting development of the project or applications in the different stage. When you draft research plan, when you look in agency requirement, when you look in institutional requirement, finalizing research plans. So this would be adjustment of the budget during the all the channels on the different stages, but and certainly hopefully, by the end, we before submission, we arrived to a really optimal budget. But in the same time, to be competitive, certainly all the time, we keep this in the mind. So we, like our advice, so just make sure that you take in consideration all needs, but in the same time, also we need to be competitive to prepare competitive proposal to get funding. Okay, so this is really to give you some major consideration usually should be taking when you look on development budget. Certainly program requirement. This is why I don't want to give exactly what should be taken in consideration because the program is so different and all the time you really need to be aware about agency requirement, expectation for a specific program. As well, principal investigator requirements, how she or he sees future project and what it's exactly he would like or she would like to achieve. Also, if research teams, their needs should be taken in consideration, as well our institutional requirements. As you know, if at McGill University we have specific rates to pay a research assistant, you should take in consideration our institutional rates or requirements. If you have collaborating institutions, they might have their specific requirements. Maybe they're not allowed to some type of payment or opposite. They need some kind of approval that might delay projects and might need additional budget consideration. Also, the different type of student and research personnel of payment. As well, it's important to take in consideration knowledge translation dissemination activity, which is now very, you could see this requirement on the most program because now Canada as well as all scientific community really looking in the importance dissemination of knowledge, not only to do research but also undertake dissemination activities. So also important awarded currency when you have a foreign sponsor, or when you have foreign collaborators, institutions on project, and in this case, and also plus inflation. So when you design budget for 3-5 years, should be also thinking about whatever price today, it might be not the same in 2-3 years. So inflation rates should be also taken in consideration. So what really, this is really tips for you when you look, I know that it's like agency guidelines, sometimes it's 50 pages, 100 pages, but this is what it's really, you should look what it's important from budget, from agency guideline to help you to develop a budget. Certainly it's project and budget period of use of funds, because whatever, if any expenses or any planning expenditure would be before start date of award or after the finish of the project, this wouldn't be disallowed, but you need really to make sure that you have enough funds to achieve planned activities. Also indirect cost. Also specific eligible and ineligible expenses as well, they might be differentiated by a type of sponsor, so it's sometimes you need to look really in complementary if you really need some type of expenses which might be not eligible for tri-agency, but when you're working maybe with another program, another foundations, it could be complementary funding. Also, it's important to see if rebudgeting authority for this particular program, because if rebudgeting is flexible, so when grants awarded, PI will be able to switch between expenses lines, so it's one thing, but also we have the program of funding when this is not flexible, so you're not able to switch, when it's awarded you are not able to switch from one line to another line. But usually certainly it's discussed before awarded. Also carry forward authority also vary from one type of award to another. So sometimes it's automatically if researchers didn't spend the whole budget for the first year, unspent funds will flow to the second year. But it's not all the time case, so please check, because some agencies, some programs not allowed to carry forward unspent balance to the next fiscal year. Extension, again, if researchers wasn't able to complete activities, not able to spend all the funds on activities, sometimes extensions automatic, like you know, for some tri-agency program that you have additional year right away, but for some program, for some sponsors, you need to ask extension before to spend funds or to continue activity after the end of awards. And usually, not usually, it's mandatory that this extension needs to be asked in advance before the end of official project. As well, what is important to look in mandatory requirement of matching cash or in-kind contribution, because we have more and more program which required really to match granting agency funding or sponsor funding with another type of contributions. It could be cash, it could be in kind. And when we sign on such applications, for us it's very important that we have letter of support confirming that this contribution, whoever provide contribution, might be partner, might be department, agreed to provide, I don't know, additional lab space or time of a technician to devote to this project. We need a really written confirmation that it's really approved. As well, very important to look if sub-award, subcontracting mechanism permitted by sponsor by a specific program. Because sometimes when you have partners on team, on the project team, it's not all the time that you will be allowed to transfer money to another institution. So please be careful when planning project, planning activities, how project should be designed. And also As I mentioned, so make sure if necessary, if requirement for collaborating consortium agreement, which address the different type of relations among different partners. So this is also, please come to see us. We will help you to draft agreement and to negotiate this type of agreement. So this is what institutional consideration now you need to keep in mind. So rates of pay for each research personnel. And now you know that it's very important to talk about research assistant salary as well, even when we include a payment to some management staff or whatever. So it should be really aligned with rates at McGill. And if you include in your budget, in your project, somebody from another institution, so those rates should be taken in consideration, because sponsors will ask anytime, they might ask anytime, sponsor might ask to prove this is a rate that you're claiming or you including, it's really valid rates. Also, per diem rates for travel, it's again, usually certainly it's institutional rates that it's acceptable, but on some program it might be treasure board travel rates, but it's again, it should be in accordance with their requirement and you have to apply exact rate, not more than allowed. Indirect cost rate, this is certainly when you working on the budget for tri-agency, you know, you not include indirect cost or on provincial. But it's again, we have a lot of sponsors now, especially that we're trying to diversify our source of funding, because not only going beyond of tri-agency and beyond of provincial funding, those non-accredited agency, we must include indirect cost rates in the budget. I will show you a little later what is like McGill current policy on those rates. As well, taxes important, and taking in consideration HR policies with its on place right now. And there is, keep in mind that there are the different McGill specific agreements with a certain agency. For example, for U.S. federal funding, we have specific rates that define, for example, maximum allowable benefits that we could be charged on those grants. So when you plan, it should be also taken in consideration that you cannot pass specific rates. Or, for example, we have specific rates with European Union agreements. So those, it's like more specific what type of indirects you should apply. And also risk management, independent of expenses, insurance should be taken in consideration. It's again, it might be when you see travel overseas or buying a car, it's just maybe should be really clarify from the beginning who will pick up this type of insurance and if it's McGill insurance enough to cover those type of expenses. And certainly, as mentioned again, that if it's sub-awards, subcontracts, so please consider requirement of collaborating institutions. So indirect cost, as I mentioned, for tri-agency, I mean, as I would like to bring again to attention, because very often, or not often, but some researchers don't understand, they think that our office or whatever ask to include indirect cost when we decide to include. No, because all research incurred indirect cost. Even when you develop a budget for tri-agency or for provincial agency, certainly budget include only direct cost. Why? Because we still, university is still receiving indirect cost from federal government, but through a separate program. They're taking in consideration all our grants received at McGill. Because indirect cost, we're still using indirect cost to support our research infrastructure, to support our labs, to pay for insurance, to pay for or to maintain compliances board. So the same with a government of Quebec accredited agency when we receive grants from them. You don't see, or researchers don't see, a really indirect cost component, because in their project budget only direct cost. But university received through separate CERU program indirect cost associated with research taking place. So this is we talking about. So for you, it's really very good tools. You could go on our OSR website when we on budget page, and this is, you could find the list of accredited agency. So those agency where you don't need to include any indirect cost in the budget, because they will be channeled to McGill through a separate program. But the those agency which are not identified sponsor on those lists of accredited agency or indirect cost program, this is McGill indirect cost policy. You again, you could find this on our OSR budget page. But overall, just to tell you, for example, certainly just to keep in mind that all the grants and gifts from non-profit organization, from granting agency, which applied 15% of indirect cost. All grants or contracts with industry, it's 40% of indirect cost. When we are dealing with U.S. federal agency, this is we apply 64% of indirect cost, but only on salary component, I mean on personnel, salary, wages, and benefits, except NIH grants. For NIH, it's 8% on the total cost. Also, some different policy for contracts with Canadian government agency, which handle through Public Works and Government Service Canada, hits 65% of indirect for on salary and benefits, and 2% on travel. Service agreements 40%, clinical trial 30%. Certainly, I mean, this is like indication for you. If you not sure how it's really would be treated, what kind of mechanism would be for particular project, you know, sometimes it might be confusion between service agreement or grants or et cetera, please call us, please contact your FST people, please contact our officers. We will help you really to consider from the beginning, because the policy at McGill now very strict, especially with our very difficult budget situation. So if you already or researchers agreed on some amount of contract, for example, with a specific sponsor, and they took on consideration only direct cost, and the sponsor promised 50,000, it means if researchers didn't include indirect cost in these considerations, it would be taken at McGill before researcher will receive project budget for direct cost. So this is, we don't want to put our researchers in situation when they promise to deliver something, but eventually they might not have enough funds to deliver what they promised. So this is just to give you some example how to indirect cost should be calculated. Because sometimes, the first time when you, for example, in negotiation with a sponsor and you have really, you know how much of budget you need to cover direct cost. So when the rates I showed on the previous slide, so you just multiply a rate and you arrive to the total budget that needs to be requested from a sponsor. If, it's here, yes, the second example, when, for example, when, as I mentioned, when researchers or whoever negotiated and agree that sponsor will provide 128,000, all inclusive, in order for you to figure out what would be actual project budget for direct cost, this calculations how should be made. You take the total budget, divide by 1 point rate, applicable rate, and you arrive to the project budget amount. Sometimes On the topic of indirect cost, I would like to mention to you there is some specific, because especially when researchers, for example, getting funding from industry, we talk industry or non-for-profit organization, for specific program which required matching. Example, NSERC CRD grants or SHORC partnership program, when it's a requirement of matching between funds provided by granting agency and funds bringing from industry or non-for-profit organizations. In this case, this is how it would be calculated. Specifically, you know, like for us, we have policy that all industry grants or contracts incur 40% of indirect cost. But in case if they matching with a granting agency, this percentage, this rate would be dropped to 25%. So it's giving some kind incentives to researchers, because matching with a granting agency will bring additional money to McGill to research. In the same time, why we're dropping? Because we will recuperate another 25% on granting agency portion of funding. So if something, again, if something is not clear, please don't hesitate to call us, and we will be more than happy to go with you with any particular situation and help really to develop a budget. In other questions, very often raised, how student should be paid, stipend versus salary. Actually, on the website, it's really, there is a very, I think, well-defined now by GPS office distinguish between a stipend and a salary. So stipend usually paid to graduate student, to student and graduate level when they working on grants, but in the same time, it's really they advancing their research, their theses, and other academic requirement. So stipend and fellowships awarded to provide financial support to student when he or she will complete their degrees. And method of payment is going through BCA as a stipend, except for postdocs. Salary, it's usually, it's research assistant salary, it's our rates for research work by student that doesn't advance the student own research thesis. So now, as you know, with a new AMUR agreement, all student working on grants, on projects, would be treated as research assistant, temporary research assistant, as a casual payments for students. And if grad students paid by salary, they cannot be employed more than 10 hours a week. And method of payment, it's really through appointment forms and POPs. And they will be considered as employment income, so student would be deductible, so it would be T4 issue to them. This is, as I mentioned, now we really have take in consideration the latest AMUR agreement. So this is casual research assistant. This is where we're talking about including a student who's working on grants when they're not paid as a stipend. So this is the current rates. It's updated on our website, and I really suggest you to consult what would be accurate rates to be included in calculation when you develop a budget. As well, because you support researchers during implementations, you also to follow up the same rules. A regular research assistant here certainly should take, you could see, taking in consideration that benefits, rates of benefits, it's vary between these two categories, but it's again, when you develop budget, you should take this in consideration. Again, as I mentioned before, sometimes it might not be aligned with a requirement of granting agency, as for example for U.S. federal, you know that in our agreement it's we allow to charge benefits up to 18.2, I think, percent. As now, but anyway, so you will consult. So you will not able to incorporate all this 25, 28% of benefits in the budget. So It's again to consideration how it would be recuperated at the department level, at the faculty level. And a research associate, it's unranked academics with a doctoral degree, and here you could see their minimum rate and mandatory benefits that should be included in budget. Because otherwise, if you include only a salary, again, when charges went through and benefits will be charged on grants, researchers might not have enough project budget to accomplish their activities. So, as mentioned, keep in mind that it's like minimum rates shown. If PI may offer the higher rate, it's acceptable based on specifics of research situation and as well granting agency regulation. If granting agency as not required to limit it to a certain amount, and usually they're not required, so researcher might pay a higher rate to research staff. Postdoctoral fellows. You know that they paid here at McGill via stipend. That are not required to include any benefits beyond of the total amount of a stipend. But in the eyes of Canada Revenue Agency, this would be subject to the federal income taxes. So if you would like really to look a more specific situation, when we provide you, you have access to this presentation, so all those links are hyperlinks are active, so you could click and to go in more details. Also, that important to mention that all graduate students and postdoctoral fellows, we not charge, we not add any benefits, but it's mandatory for them to pay $434 per year as health and dental insurance. Researchers, the PI, might include those charges in the budget. If for some reason they elected not include, so postdoc will pay them from their own pocket. So really, usually I know that PIs, when they're aware about the situation, usually they include in budget, and this is eligible expenses. It would be treated also as benefits. Another important to consider is sales taxes. When in the budget you budgeted to buy any kind of goods or services, because consultancy services is also subject to sales taxes. So this amount, all the time, you should budget it for 6.937%. Why this amount? It's really we helping you to give exactly number what should be charged, because as you know, we have GST taxes to charge, we have Quebec taxes to charge at usual rate, but as academic institution, McGill has rebates, like 47 on provincial sales taxes and 67 rebates on federal taxes. So when you calculate all those charges minus rebates, you arrive to this rates as 6.937. Just to explain, because very often might be questions from researchers when they or from you when you see how charges would be done on your grant, on your fund when it's awarded. So at the beginning, when it's bought through marketplace or whatever, McGill assess the whole amount of taxes, 5% and 9.975%. But after rebates, this would be reduced. So grant will not be charged more than 6%. This is also a reference again to the sales tax quick reference, when you could really to go to log in and to see more details explanation about sales taxes. So the all the important to keep in the mind that this rule of the taxes apply to all purchases, as I mentioned, including consultancy services, because this is sometimes really not clear for some researchers, and they include 10,000 for consultant, but when after this they need to pay additional taxes, it looks like budget might be disbalanced already. Do you have any questions, or we'll just continue the question at the end? No? Okay. So this is like what I mentioned before. It's really applicable, like general rules to different type of granting agency, to the different type of the program. Here, I would like really to pay your attention to partnership programs when involved the different stakeholders. So it's really advised to involve stakeholders from the beginning in developing a proposal, in developing budget. So to make sure that a requirement of other institutions is reflected in a proposal, in a budget from the beginning. As well, as I mentioned, it's important to budget it for annual meetings, sites visits, when other institutions, when the other partners involved in a project. Also, in case of partnership program, it's really increased monitoring from the sponsors, because they will very carefully to assess reporting how spending on one type of on one portion correspond to spending on another portions, and usually those programs it's have less flexibility on changes in the budget. Certainly, usually there is no rebudgeted authority, but they might allow you to move from one budgeted line to another budgeted line if not more than 10-15%. So this is really very important to remember when develop a budget. As well, matching contributions are often required and must be reported to the sponsor. And I could tell you from my experience, for the last year, some programs were really very carefully looking on matching. I don't know, CIDA, Canadian International Development Agency. We went through, for the last 5-6 years, we went through few audits on in-kind matching contributions. So whatever declared as in-kind still needs to have all the supporting documents as office space, real time spent by technician on the project. I know that it's like, and you know that it's a federal agency, provincial agency, were a little bit more flexible or not pay attention, but I would like to mention just recently, in the last couple months, we received already from, for example, for tri-agency on some matching, on some programs such as CRDs, CERC CRDs, or industrial chairs, the notice that they looked and spending on NSERC portion much higher than spending on matching industry portion. So they sent us a letter telling that they required to readjust expenses, and they could take, they could ask us to reimburse NSERC portion because it's not spending proportionally. So the practice, we know that in the past researchers very often used those type of the program when they ask for tri-agency funding. They spend tri-agency funding. They save a lot of industrial portion, and they will be able to use for some other activities. I could tell you that compliance is now really very strict, and please make sure and advise researchers from the beginning, whatever it's planning, it should be really respected during implementation of the project stage. And as I mentioned, for partnership program, collaboration consortium agreement very often required, and it's again, please come to us on the early stage, because consortium agreement, yes, it's include the different type of financial obligations, as well IP clause, as well as other considerations, roles and responsibilities among the different player that eventually will be reflected in the budget and will have influence on the budget settings. This is, as I mentioned, about matching contribution. Be very careful when prepare matching of contributions, because it's again, it could be cash contribution, it could be in-kind contribution, but all those contributions should be very well documented, supporting documents. So if you promise to a technician time to support would be 20K during the period of the project, certainly those numbers should be substantiate some type of your basis of calculation. It means it's really should align how many hours this technician would be required to spend on the project, and taking in consideration his or her pay rate. So in this case, you have a really very solid backup of estimated budget. As well, when its project would be running, you will use the same approach to report actual expenses. But it's again, please pay attention because a matching contribution requirement might vary by a granting agency, by different program, because some type of expenses might be considered by one agency, but not be eligible for another agency. For example, we give you some examples of in-kind contributions. For example, when materials or resources to the project that have a monetary value and the cost, if not allocated to the project, it could be borne by a contributing partner. Example, room rental, software license, staff time, and etc. But it's again, be careful if for this particular program, room rental would be eligible, because sometimes a granting agency might consider a room rental if it's rented outside of McGill campus, but if you're using a room here, for example, to the conference, it's again, some program accept, other program will tell no. You will not, McGill will not contribute any additional funds to pay for this room, so this might be not eligible. So it's again, please attention to guidelines and to the program requirement. And as I mentioned already, that all contribution eventually, when awarded, must be tracked. Receipts, copy of receipts, timesheet for technician that they spent on the project, and etc. It's again very important rule, no double dipping. If you promised 20 hours of technician to one project and 50 hours to another project, it's what agency they might really to consider that certainly time promised to the different should be more than 100. Time, it's for sure. And if industrial matching, you match those expenses with INSERC CRD, those industrial contribution cannot be matched with provincial partnership funding, because this is very careful, because we are getting audits that it's really reconcile how many hours claimed in the different grants by one researcher or by one technician, and if it's more than 100%, it's raised question, and also we might be required to return funds. Also, very important foreign currency when you're dealing with a foreign sponsor or when you have foreign collaborators on the team. As for now, we're using certainly one-to-one when we projected a budget with U.S. sponsors. For other sponsors, certainly please, when you make a budget, certainly you develop budget in Canadian currency, and sometimes you have to submit applications in euros or in other currencies, sometimes in Koreans. Exchange rate should be taken by a rate of Bank of Canada rate, not cash rate, because those rates vary. And I mean, on application stage as well, when you're claiming expenses, it's also all the time we operate with Bank of Canada rate. It's required by any agency. Just to mention you, when you develop a budget or researchers develop a budget, will not be surprised that your budget would be not so strict when would be in Canadian dollars, because those budget would be adjusted on the currency exchange rate on the time when foreign currency received at McGill. So this would be converted in Canadian and budget would be adjusted in Canadian dollars. When we issue a sub-award to other institution, they issue it in Canadian dollars. Because we are in Canada, we operating in Canadian dollars, and when we issue tri-agency sub-awards to another countries, we issue it in Canadian dollars, but certainly they will be converted when they receive their money in their local currency. So, what happens when budgets reduced? You know, sometimes when we signed agreement or we receive a grants notification notice, it's mentioned that it's budget, for example, for 5 years, but it's really subject to availability fund by federal funds or some other funds. So sometimes it might be varied, it might be reduced by some 5%. I mean, it certainly is big. So when budget is flexible, and a sponsor reducing a budget, it's really easier. I mean, it's easy in the sense that you could really very cut some budgeted lines, and usually sponsor, if they're cutting a budget for some reason, they even suggesting to PI where those cutting might be, savings might be done. When a budget is fixed, it's really authority of PI to look and to revise a budget before they again would be considered fixed. Because in case of a fixed budget, we advise you, please contact us, we could help you. Because one is budget fixed and you need to cut somewhere, certainly, usually it's required also justification. If you cutting budget, it's not just cutting budget, it means you are cutting some kind activities, so you should take in consideration if with cutting activities, with cutting budget, you still will be able to achieve objectives of this particular project. So revised budget should be, like fixed budget should be really very careful looked in before negotiated and approved again by a granting agency. And if during the period of the project you could see some changes in the budget, you might need required like more funds on travel or reduced funds on materials, any changes to fixed budget should be pre-approved by a granting agency in writing, sometimes even required signing amendment. As I mentioned, yes, so this is my first point. So if variances allowed, for example, up to 15% between budgeted lines, it's certainly all changes needs pre-approval by agency, and sometimes it's email from program officers acceptable, but sometimes we need to go even to amendment. Our team or awards management team, they usually now develop terms and conditions, and if those requirements are so strict, they will be reflected in those terms and conditions, so please pay attention. So just a few tips of best practices when you develop optimal budget. So it's really be realistic in the plan, really to see which component have priorities. Because if for some reason you don't have enough funds and you need to cut on some activities, make sure that you're not cutting on priority activities. Refer to the project plan in budget justification. As I mentioned, for example, make sure that timeline is matching. So if you plan annual meeting in Europe in the second year of the project, make sure that you have travel budget in the second year available to fly to Europe. Maybe in the first year when it's like annual meetings here in Canada, maybe for your team you need less expenses, maybe just to buy a train ticket to Ottawa. Also, research estimated cost. Avoid using estimated value. Include a reasonable estimated cost, showing that some research has been done, listing the specification as appropriate. Because it's really very important to see some when you estimate cost. So if you plan, for example, to have a consultant for some activities, just look on the market value, look on some similar job done by other consultancy, and to have in head, or at least to see some basis of estimation. If you estimated lab space, we have specific rates at McGill what could help you to estimate space. So all estimation should be based on some real value. So good budget justification, it's really provide to sponsor clear activity when budget what activity would be undertaking, and that it's aligned really, it looks like good really project management practice for them, so they more ensure that when they grant this particular award to this particular team, that the team will be able to achieve objective and also will be able really manage properly funds. So when recommending a proposal for funding, peer review committee evaluate feasibility and appropriateness of the amount requested. Especially with tri-agency and other, they not pronounce that expenses eligible or not eligible. Still, all expenses must be confirmed to agency guidelines. So if, for example, on applications to granting agency, some expenses were included, and it doesn't mean that peer review pay really attention to this particular specific expenses is eligible to this particular program. They're really happy with objective. They see that it's budget overall estimations like justifiable. But when it's awarded, they still you have to follow confirmation and alliance with agency guidelines requirement. So as best practice, we suggest you that when you look in the cost incurred, really assess them by follow criteria. If they're allowable by granting agency, if they're allocable, that project will really benefit from those expenses, and if they're reasonable, so as I mentioned, for example, if you pay consultant, to make sure that you're paying consultant on the market value today and not exaggerated amount, and that they're consistent. So if you consistent and balance with payment across university. So if one researcher is elected to pay, I don't know, 100K to a technician when on another project it's paid at just usual rate, certainly it's really might create problem at university and might create problem really to prove to granting agency one why somebody paid more than usual practice at university. So that's it, what I wanted to give you overview of. I know that it's like, it's really topic, it's huge. And what we also trying to do, as I mentioned, now we will be developing additional tools that help you, for example, to, as I mentioned, to keep a timesheet, to develop a work plan, to align with budget requirements. So certainly we'll continue to work with you and we will follow on this, but in meantime, please at least use those links as guidance for you, and please contact us as early as possible so we could really answer your specific questions and help to develop budget to specific application. Okay, any questions, please?
Okay, I want to ask, for in-kind contributions, what should the researcher include in the application? Where does he go to get confirmation? Is it the chair?
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
okay. Question where a researcher should go to for confirmation of in-kind contribution. Answer that they should go to the source of contribution. If it's contribution, for example, if chair, if they include on their budget that it would be, for example, lab space, or it would be some time of technician devoid to support this project. So those contributions should be confirmed in writing by chair that it's eligible. If some other, for example, sometime it's again depending on the faculty, sometimes a space or, for example, a scholarship for the student, this under faculty's responsibilities. For example, some faculty, they might provide additional scholarships. So this confirmation letter or at least email, we accept emails, we're not going, you know, just like show us with stamps, but at least email from the dean should be included to prove that it's really promised that a scholarship would be allocated. If we're talking about contribution from another institution, that some institution promised, okay, that they will provide some materials or they will provide a license or different type, this is, should be letter from this particular institution, letter should be signed authorized representative, not by PI, by authorized representative, because PI is also as our researchers, you know, like it's like they cannot promise their lab space because it's not, it's again, it's under jurisdictions of a chair or director of institute. So this is a really for outside institution, it should be a really confirmation should be given by authorized representative. Any other questions?
Are there any issues that you encounter on a regular basis or that you'd like to share questions? We've shared, you know, things at our end that we see that we think would help if they were put in a budget up front, but you within the departments at a local level, are there things that we haven't captured, that we've missed, that you'd like to further? Okay.
Okay. So we consider that everything clear, or if any clarification, yes, please just contact us and follow up. You have all our contacts, and you have, and if you need some additional tools, please contact us. We will provide you.
Thank you. Thank you everyone for coming and have a nice day.